go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Hello everyone, welcome to Ask Me Anything with Jameela Jamil. These are my favourite I Weigh episodes sometimes because I get to sit and talk with a friend who is wiser and cleverer than me about your problems, and you write in questions and we answer them together. What you're hearing right now is my guest Grace Campbell. Hello, welcome Grace.
Can you still hear me chewing?
A little bit, but she's having to quickly replenish herself because the last time we did this together, she got a little bit distracted at the end because she was so hungry and waited till I'd finished a long, really thoughtful monologue of an answer.
It was really profound. It was really profound. Really good advice.
And I said it to her and then looked to her for a response and she just went, "Can I have the packet of crisps in my bag?" And that's all she said, and never actually answered the question, and then just ate for the end of the episode, and I just had to wrap things up. So in order to stop that from happening, I forced her to snack and drink just beforehand.
It's very, do you remember in Kevin and Perry when Kathy Burke's character's like, "Can I have a jam sandwich with that?" Yeah. That's like me all the time. Like, I'm constantly having to ask adults, "Can I quickly eat before we stop?"
So are you feeling all right today?
Yes, because
are you
just
with
had
us?
A Nutri-Grain. Mm-hmm. And then I had some crisps, sort of what we eat in the morning. Mm-hmm. Going on here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll have a banana afterwards.
Yeah, we had chocolate lollipops. The breakfast of champions.
Yes, exactly. We're set.
Okay, so you're here to answer questions. The last time you were on, everyone was obsessed. They really, really enjoyed your insight. We also had your fans send in some questions they wanted to know. So it's especially tailored to you. And Grace has a brilliant podcast about dating and talks a lot about dating in her stand-up and just the experience of being a young woman in this world growing up. You are going to be 30 imminently.
Oh gosh, I know, in 10 days.
How are you feeling?
I feel like I'm 30 already. Probably because I have like old friends.
Because
like
we had a birthday
you.
Party for you 2 days ago.
Did you just
say it because you've got old friends? You can't trigger me about age.
I know.
Because I love
That's
being old.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm on your level where I'm looking forward
You're not
to getting older.
Anywhere near my level.
I feel like really excited for my 30s. I'm
good.
Done with my 20s. Like, I'm just done with them.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to go into this new decade of like I'm wise now.
Yeah, totally. How do you feel as you say goodbye to your 20s about your 20s?
Very,
you could summarize it.
I feel like really proud and triumphant that I managed to make it through my 20s. It was very touch and go. I nearly died twice. And have had some terrible heartbreaks and I've just learned so much in my 20s. So I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, bless her. Like, the version of me at the beginning of my 20s was such a sad, lost person. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like found, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah. Why are you looking at me like that? I do think that, I mean, even in the, like, what, how long have we been friends? 3 years?
Yeah, like 3-4 years.
In the three years that we've been friends, I feel like I've watched you go through just forest fire after forest fire. And I have to say, like, friend to friend, I think that you are unbelievably strong and resilient. And I like your determination to be a resilient person, that you don't wish to marinate for too long in the shit things that happen. You want to turn it into art, turn it into a funny story, process it and then move on, and then use what you've learned to tell everyone else.
Exactly. And to never make the same mistake again.
Yeah. It's recycling. That's what I do with all of my work. It's like, I fucked up all these things. Here is the guide how to not end up like me.
It's like offsetting your emissions. Mm-hmm. It's like, making it worth something and the so problem, that someone else doesn't do it.
Exactly. And the problem is that no one talks about how difficult your 20s are. Like, everyone makes it look like these are the best years of your life. And in many ways they are, because like your body is the most resilient and you can bounce back quicker from mistakes and you're not traumatized as much yet than by the time you get to my age, where you become a bit jaded and, you know, towards your sort of crone era. but my jadedness doesn't make me feel down. I don't know if you are experiencing the same thing, where it's like, I think we sometimes use the word jaded as if it is this negative thing. I don't think it's jaded. I think I'm just wise to how fucked the world is, especially for women. And now I know how better to protect myself. And I know that I have the right to protect myself. Before, I used to feel like I was being difficult or dramatic. You have a smirk on your face as if you're about to ask me if you need a snack.
No, okay, my God, no. I'm just enjoying
it. Wasn't
sure. Oh my God,
you
got such trauma.
I've got PTSD.
Yeah, you do. I'm really fine.
Okay. But I do think that, like, I don't think I would call that jaded. I think I just feel prepared.
Jaded is the wrong word.
Yeah, we've got to stop saying
it. I think it's like, I don't feel jaded at all about getting older. I feel like, oh my God, it's so nice. I look at people in their early 20s now. Like, I have one friend who's in her early 20s who I like sort of check in on from now and then. And I'm like,
nonce.
Rich, fucking rich, coming from you, Jamila Jamil.
Who's friends with Grace?
When did you prey 10 years on me?
Younger.
Yeah. You saw me from across the room and you went, that looks like a ripe young 24-year-old girl.
27.
I was 26 or 27, okay. Yeah. Anyway, just semantics. Mm-hmm. Is that the word? Is that the right word?
I think so, yeah.
Not
yeah.
Pedantics?
No, it's semantics. We're supposed to set you up as an authority here.
Right. So, I look at like people that age right now and I think, God, like, you have so much to discover, and I'm not jealous of that, because I feel really happy that I've gone through that period of discovery.
And while we don't want to scare the fucking shit out of anyone who's currently listening to this from your 20s, we're broadcasting to you in the middle of your 20s. We want you to know that even when it feels like there's absolutely no way you can or will survive this moment, you will.
You will. And I think that's really cool.
Yes.
Like, I think the thing that I feel now that I'm turning 30 is
did you fart?
No, I was my foot on the pole, actually. I would never fart ever in my whole life. I've never farted.
Okay. Famously, you don't have a bum hole.
Yeah. Famously, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why I have to just slowly snack a tiny little crisp. I really feel like, looking back on all of that, so I'm not trying to deter people from what they're going to go through in their 20s at all. I think it's really, really fucking cool that you're going to start this period feeling like an adult, feeling like you've got your shit together, feeling like you understand the world, and then every year you're going to be like, oh my God, I did not know anything last year, and then oh my God, and that happens every year, and then you get to the end of your 20s and you're like, it's a transformation that's like unbelievable. And when you get to see that, and like having in the most part done it yourself, it's a huge achievement. Some people don't grow from their shit, you know. Some people like go through their 20s and move into their 30s the same person. It's only the cool, wise people that
I do think that some part of that is a bit gendered, and it's not a way of dismissing men. I think lately in the last few years, I've really come to understand how important, how lucky women are to have each other, how much we dig into everything, right into the weeds, to the point where we almost get ridiculed as a gender for how much we
analyze things.
But we do that to keep ourselves and each other safe, right? It's a really important part of growth. And I think that it's so sad that men don't have that same sense of community.
And I think that's why a lot of men do, like, it takes them a lot longer.
It's arrested development.
Yeah, exactly. It takes them a lot longer to get to some of these epiphanies. I also think women challenge their friends much more than men do, which again is like, that's not about like overanalyzing things. My friends have challenged me so much in my life, where they've really called out my bad habits and tried to make me move, and you're including you, And had that not happened, I probably would have thought I was like fine at 25 and had no problems. And I think that's a really great part of like evolving as a person, is people calling you out on your bullshit.
I feel the same way. And also, by the way, even my male friends have been instrumental in my growth, but it's because they are talking to a woman. It's the way that they don't get to talk to each other that creates, I think, an arrested development, especially for men who don't have a lot of female friends. And so it makes me just feel so grateful for you and all of the amazing women in my life. And I also want to say, just as a warning, your 30s are still every year, you're like, man, I really thought I had it figured out last year. And also, there's a really interesting thing that some people go through that I think is always important to be wary of, is that sometimes your 20s can be so fucking terrifying that you overcorrect at the beginning of your 30s, being like, that's it, I'm pulling up boundaries, I'm going to self-preserve, and you almost go too far. And I did that. I overcorrected, went too far, became a bit too honest, a bit too leery.
No way. You... I can't even imagine that.
but now I'm having to pull myself back out of that and being like, it's okay to be soft. I've stopped rejecting the feminine side of myself that for a while I was like, because I got so fucked with because of misogyny in my 20s from men and women, I was like, I'm going to stop being in any way. I just rejected my femininity, rejected what was soft about me, looked at it as a weakness, looked at it as a reason that I get preyed upon. And I've now come to a place of stillness and confidence where I don't feel the need to overcorrect. I feel like I can be soft again. And that feels like a really nice thing. So remember, you also have that to look forward to. All right.
Fun. That's fun.
Yeah.
Getting older is fun.
It's truly the most interesting part of my life, I think. Okay, so we've been sent in some questions from both yours and my audience. The first one is, are you in a thruple? I don't even know which one that is.
That was sent to me.
But do you think people think you're in a thruple with me and James?
I think that is what it's referring to.
Oh, my God.
I don't.
Why would people say that to you?
I don't know. We are not in a thruple. I would say it's much more like a sort of family unit.
Oh my God, are you going to be another person who refers to us as your parents?
No, because it's also like you're both my siblings, which is then weird because you're a couple. So it all gets very complicated in my head. So I see you as my brother and my sister, but then it's like my brother and my sister having sex.
We can be stepsisters and then it's like porn.
Yeah, exactly. But I do really, I mean, I see James as my big brother. Like,
I see him as your twin.
Yeah.
As your identical twin.
In such a crazy way. Like, I feel like I'm so related to him. It's really weird.
Yeah.
We're very similar. So then you're like my really cool, like, sister-in-law that I'm obsessed with.
Okay, well, we both know that that's not true. We both know that I'm a very, very strange, nerdy, intense, neurodivergent sister. That's fine.
But you're also really cool. Look at, okay, this outfit that I'm wearing right now.
Mm-hmm. I was wearing a tight waistcoat and baggy
cool
trousers.
Like laid back trousers with Adidas slacks. Superstars. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be wearing anything this cool. Everyone for you.
Great.
What was I wearing the last time we came here? My Versace sunglasses that you said look like
Jimmy Savile's
glasses. Yeah. And then a string vest.
I think it was great. You have a lovely vibe. It's just, you know, it's fun to experiment, that's all. All right, next up. Would it be an ick if your therapist did stand up on the side?
Well, I think, I would love it if I bumped into my therapist at a gig and we were like both on the lineup. And then I mean, it would be amazing for my stand-up.
Right.
Like, then I could write a whole show about the fact that I bumped into my therapist talking about me in her stand-up. Mm-hmm. I think it's more than an ick.
Wait, would you be offended or like a bit...
If she didn't talk about me, yes.
I was going to say, would it be more offensive if she did talk about you or if she didn't?
No, if she didn't talk about me, I would jump off the bridge. Because in therapy, I'm always there and I'm like, God, I bet I'm your most interesting client.
Everyone thinks that.
I always think that. Like whenever I leave, I'm like, God, I bet she's got some fucking boring accountant coming in.
Are you like,
next.
Oh God, I feel so sorry for her that she's not allowed to talk to other people about this because she must just be bursting at the seams to tell everyone.
Tell everyone this gossip she's getting. Also, my therapist, we were so on a vibe that like actually in another life we would have been friends. And when I make her laugh, it's like no feeling I've ever had in the world. Like I love making my therapist laugh.
That's so funny.
So I don't know if it'd be I think it's probably a bit inappropriate if your therapist is doing stand-up about their clients.
Well, there was that famous, I think it was in Britain, there was a gynecologist who then had like a 20-year career
In stand-up.
In stand-up, yeah. And I just felt
talking
so...
Talking about Fanny.
But yeah, she was talking about vaginas the whole time and like the misunderstandings about gynecology and what he really sees and what he really thinks. And I was like, this is very dangerous.
Yeah,
this
feels
really
crazy.
Destructive. And imagine being any one of his clients. And he was an older guy, so he must have been doing it for decades. And just wondering, like, is that my vagina he's talking about in this instance? Absolutely harrowing. So I'm against, and I wonder if that's happened to this person. This person's therapist.
Yeah, 100%.
Must be a stand-up, and they're not sure how to feel about it. And
but also,
it's
like the word ick, it's like, it's more than an ick, because you're not dating your therapist.
Yeah.
It's actually, like, inappropriate if your therapist is, like, also doing stand-up. It's not like, I once had a friend who was seeing a male therapist, and then one day the male therapist texted her saying, I'm really sorry, I'm not going to be able to see you anymore because I've developed feelings for you, so I don't think it's appropriate. And she was so freaked out because she was like, I've told this man. Well, I was like, how amazing.
Someone's seen your craziest side.
In your worst form. And then they've been like, I'm in love with you.
Are you now upset that none of your therapists have declared that?
But I was like, why has that never happened to me? But she was really freaked out because she was like, you know, you're so vulnerable with a therapist. You're so open. You're so like unguarded. And then to think, he just wanted to fuck me. It's quite weird.
Yeah, because then also you can't trust the advice you've been given.
Exactly. It's a strange feeling.
Yeah.
So not that that's the same, but I feel like if you think that your therapist is mining your sessions for material, which by the way, my sessions, that could be a great Edinburgh show. I wouldn't blame them if they did.
Thing is, you already turn your sessions into your Edinburgh show.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Hi there. I'm Liza Powell O'Brien, and I'm a writer, a reader, and the wife of someone you may have heard of. And I'm here to tell you about the newest season of my podcast for Team Coco, Significant Others. Each week, we tell stories you may not know about a person you probably do, like Benedict Arnold, whose wife Peggy may be the reason he almost succeeded in betraying his country. Look for Significant Others wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, someone said, why do I feel bad for not wanting a boyfriend or partner while I'm finishing my degree?
Well, you shouldn't.
Yeah. You only feel bad because of society.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with wanting to prioritize. This is something that I've become so obsessed with is, and if I talk about it again at home, I think James is going to actually set the house on fire. But executive function, which is like how many decisions our brains can make, how much information our brains can hold and then function at a high level. And if you have a relationship, I don't think we talk enough about how much of your fucking time and attention it takes, because you're having to constantly contend, not just with another person, but compromising for them, wondering if they're okay, wondering how you come across to them. It's just like fucking endless juggling. And it's lovely.
So much brain space.
So much brain space. It's so hard. It's like, I never do as well at work when I'm, especially in an early stage of a relationship, this person sounds single. It's like the beginning, I was telling my friend last night that I saw a stand-up once compare the beginning of a relationship to just being legal stalkers. It's like, oh, I just happened to be going for a walk in the area where you work. Are you around for lunch? You know, just like the way you make yourself available.
And also like agonizing over like what you're going to say and how long you're going to wait to like contact them. This is why I'm single at the moment, because since I've been fully single, I've gotten so much more work done.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm just going to do this for a bit longer. And then when I feel a bit less busy, then I'll be like, okay, maybe I'll have some time now to do that. Because it is so exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Trying to get someone to fall in love with you.
But it's also just to maintain and to build. And it's this funny thing where it doesn't, you know, Esther Perel was recently talking about the fact that you shouldn't wait until you've dealt with all of your possible emotional or mental health problems. Obviously, the big ones try to resolve before you get into a relationship. But you can't wait to be sort of quote unquote perfect before you enter a relationship, because a relationship's just going to surface shit that you could never have found without being in a relationship. Exactly. So just jump in and then do your best and be active, you know, when it comes to therapy or whatever, or healing once you start. And so I think this person is feeling an instinct that society overrides sometimes. You have an instinct that you really want to achieve this thing. I don't think it should go on for so long that you're like, I can't have a career if I'm in a relationship.
No,
but a huge task like finishing exams is important.
But also, you should never feel bad for wanting to be single.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing that I felt so much like, so, again, talking about my 20s, so much of my like early 20s was just me being like, I need to be in a relationship, being in a relationship, that ending, I need to be in another relationship, like feeling like I didn't really have an identity unless I had a boyfriend. Mm. And then in the last couple of years, having become so deeply like, when I'm alone, it being like the happiest periods of my life. But not, I don't have feel shame about that. I always thought turning 30 single would make me really depressed. But now I'm here, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so happy. Like, I'm not in an unhealthy relationship. I haven't got someone who's like making me feel shit or like stressing me out. And I know I will meet someone. I'm not stressed about that. But it's more like being content single is something that I don't feel we celebrate enough.
No. And also, conversely, if you are someone who wants a boyfriend, you're not weak and you're not unfocused. It's just okay to want whatever you want. I think the worrying sign is when we feel guilty for wanting whatever we want.
Yeah,
we feel guilty for having like a sense of agency and decisiveness. You should never feel bad. Your instincts and your body, while not always perfectly accurate, generally know what's best for you. And I do think that social media and the chaos of the world and the news and everything draws us away from our instincts. And I don't think women are, in particular women who have such amazing and strong instincts, I think we are constantly encouraged to override them, which is why I think we do things to our bodies in order to be thin, or to we withstand pain. We put ourselves in dangerous situations, sometimes emotionally dangerous situations with relationships. We have been conditioned since we were younger, like smile even when you don't feel like smiling, hug someone that you don't want to hug, don't be unfriendly, just cover everything up. We have been so encouraged from the beginning of our developmental years to override our instincts. And the most empowering thing you can do is get back to that voice, because that is a smarter voice than any magazine, any public, you know, whatever, influencer or figure. And it's something that I think is the main win for me of getting older.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like how I feel, because like, this is the thing, I think do whatever you want to do, but so much of my life, I've been made to feel like being single is really shameful. And even now, people will be like, so are you seeing anyone? Like, whenever I'll meet up with someone, they'll be like, so are you seeing anyone? And I'm like, how boring. That's such a boring thing for me now, because I'm like, I feel reduced to like the fact that I am or I'm not dating someone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more like now I can say out loud, I don't care if someone says that. Whereas before, I would internalize that so much and see that as like a societal shame.
My TikTok is very targeting of me with content about the dangers of women being single and how like this is actually a bad thing and women don't know what they want and actually everyone's going to end up alone and this, that and the other and cat lady.
So you're in an Andrew Tate algorithm, is that what you're saying?
I love incels.
Yeah, no, you know you do.
I'm being targeted at a certain age with this content and like trad wife content and all of this other stuff.
That is because we also got really obsessed with like watching
I think
wife,
that's what it
so
is
I think your algorithm, like that is because we were like obsessively sharing Tradwife stuff with each other for ages. So your algorithm
I'm now on like I'm now on misogyny talk
literally like being single you're gonna die.
But I think that because so many women are wising up to the fact that actually you're not, it's this new thing I've seen people saying is like, when men are like, who am I competing with to get you? It's like, you're not competing with another man to get me. You're competing with me because my treatment of myself is so good and I'm so happy on my own.
I love that.
I think it's fantastic. I don't worry for those women at all. I think it just means that we're setting the bar higher and people are just going to have to meet that bar. And I think that's better for everyone.
Yes. There are things, obviously, I do not agree with Andrew Tate at all. And like my whole life, I'm just being trolled by all of his fans. But I think we have to find ways to sort of come to some union with them on things, because they are so much of the population right now. Like being single, the amount of times that I've gone on dates with people and then realise after 20 minutes that they are an Andrew Tate fan, they're everywhere. They're lurking among us. They are. They really are. I've got this joke that's like, you know the phrase, in London you're never further than 6 feet away from a rat?
Yeah.
I now say, in London you're never further than six swipes away from an Andrew Tate fan, because they are like everywhere. I told you that story about that guy.
Yeah, totally. And by the way, that doesn't come from nowhere. Like, Caitlin Moran was on this podcast talking about the fact that she thinks the way that, like, the sort of the rise of the feminist rage in the Me Too movement led to a lot of us going, like, men are trash and dump him and fuck men. And I just, like, the most embarrassing thing about me is that I'm attracted to men. And there was a lot of actual misandry where we went from feminism and anti-misogyny into full misandry. And even though it was painful, I think millennial men still remembered a time where women and men had really just very little equality. Whereas these boys who are growing up now, where they're looking at all these like female billionaires and women being very empowered and lots of equal roles, we don't have perfect equity, but we're the furthest that we've ever been. They're like, okay, so women seem pretty okay and men are trash. So those are the kids who are right.
And what they see is women being like, I'm not going to be with a man who's not 6 foot one, like, you know, setting all of these like crazy standards.
Totally. So they've grown up just in misandry. Yeah. And so they don't have a reference point for why people are so fucking angry. And they are the ones who are ripe to be conditioned. Because of course they don't feel safe with us, because we're not making them feel safe. We're like, you are born inherently evil because you're a man. So when that happens, those boys are able to be so easily indoctrinated against women because they don't have the context. And if we are more aware of that, we can realize that we need to rein it in a little bit.
What I'm trying to do in my show is like, in those bits, I really don't want it to be something that like is gonna, because I, you know, James came to see me perform at this like comedy club in London, and I've been writing a lot of this show in comedy clubs in London where it's a lot of men in the audience, because my audience is quite female. And it's been so interesting, this bit I've worked on, this like 10 minute set about Andrew Tate and like incel culture, and it's so interesting that when I bring his name up, a few men will get really prickly and sort of like ready to fight me, like, and ready to heckle me. Yeah. And they're all quite drunk at these clubs, you know, it's like late nights on Thursdays and Fridays. But then when I start going in on what I'm saying, they all calm down, because it's like I'm trying to do it in a way that's like, what I'm saying is what I feel. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I would never date someone who's an Andrew Tate fan. But then I argue my reasons for it in a way that's not like isolating to them, but also quite self-depreciating to me as well. And I think it's just about towing the line. I mean, maybe this sounds bad because I feel like this will anger women, but it's sometimes about towing the line so that you don't alienate that huge part of the population.
Yeah, but that's science. There's science behind that, which is that if you say something that triggers someone, of course, in theory, they should be able to just take that and handle that and understand your rage and pain and context. But their brain is built to, if they feel shame or they feel judgment or they feel labeled in any way that feels aggressive, then their defenses just come up and there's nothing they can do. We think of that as a moral choice. Their brain is built to protect that person. That person's brain does not give a shit about you. They are there just to protect that person. And so then like adrenaline and cortisol go bursting through this person. They can't think straight anymore and they can't hear us. Like, they're, every time we say something rude or mean or labeling to anyone we disagree with, it could be a family member, it could be someone from a different group, etc., we shoot up their sense of actual physical threat and danger, and then their blood rushes away from their brain to their muscles and they literally can't hear us or process the information we're giving them anymore. So we are getting nowhere by pointing at each other. And we can see that because everything is going fucking backwards. Exactly. And people are so divided.
Yeah.
So it's science. And we look at this as like a weakness or a moral failing. It's basic science. And now that I've understood that, it has massively changed the way that I communicate with everyone.
With everyone, because also since I've gotten better at that, because I used to be very combative and I used to always lose arguments because I would lose my temper and say things that would then, like, you know, ruin the whole sort of like process. But now that I'm much calmer in that, and I think that maybe that's why I now feel this way about like Andrew Tate supporters, is like, I feel like there's a way that I want to now like go on in my career dealing with these things that's just like a little bit. And maybe that is a result of like when I started doing stand up, I got like quite a lot of scathing reviews of people sort of saying that I was just like male bashing and like kind of
making sweeping statements,
making and also being very like quote unquote easily triggered by things. So maybe I have taken on some of that feedback, which you should never like listen to reviewers, but it's made me think about like how I am trying to communicate what I'm saying. And I really want men to come to my shows, and I really want men to like, this show that I'm writing at the moment is actually all for men. Like, it's about men to think about certain things. So I want to do that in a way that's just making them laugh. And we're all, I'm taking the piss out of everyone. Yeah, and no one's taking themselves too seriously.
We literally cannot afford to alienate the people whose empathy we need to engage.
Exactly. I think that's the thing that's like crucial.
Mm-hmm. Someone said, I always shut down around men and act in a way to satisfy the male gaze. How do I stop?
Hmm.
Oh, this is, I've watched this happen my whole life with so many of my most intelligent and funny, amazing female friends, where they suddenly become this sort of coy, silent, submissive version of themselves. And where that poses a problem, aside from the fact that she's then repressing herself, is that if that's not who you actually really are, then after a while, if you do end up in a relationship with that person, the real you is naturally going to fight its way out. And then that person is not at all prepared for, or maybe even, God forbid, attracted to that version of you, because you've kind of done what a lot of us do at the beginning of a relationship, which is sold this perfect version of yourself that mirrors their desire. And it's encouraged so much. Do you feel like you change around men?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so, but I think that's always, I've always shamed myself about that. Because I'm always so myself around men at the beginning in relationships. And then if they reject me, I'm like, oh, I wish I'd have like not shown my full self so early on. So I've always shamed, because I've always been that way. Like I've never flirted with anyone ever.
Same.
Like, it's just not, I kind of know how to do it.
No, I have no idea. I think what I did is I used to suppress my desires of how I like to spend time according to whatever they would like to do.
Yes.
And I think that's compromised, but it rarely went back my way. And I think when I met James, I was just turning 30. And so I was like, not doing that anymore. This is who I am. This is what I enjoy doing. And if you're not willing to compromise, you can just fuck off. And so he got like the most raw version of every part of my personality. And it was a rough start for both of us.
But this, what you're saying, I think, is the best advice. Like, what this person has to think is, you don't want someone to turn around in 6 months and then you're being yourself and they're like, whoa, 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 I thought you were this like baby voice speaking
person. Yeah, because it's not fair on either of you.
No, it's misleading. Just you really have to try and find ways that you can be comfortable like as yourself around people and men. But I get it. Like, it's like we have been so deeply conditioned to perform for men and like dress for men. And,
take
like,
up less space.
Yeah. And like the way that, you know, even like in our careers, I feel like so much it's like you'll get told to just be a bit less than to like appease men who you're trying to get work from. And when I'm around, and that's something that I do sometimes with men, is I think like, do I feel as good around this man as I do around my best friends? And if the answer is no, then probably that man's not good for me, because they're not making me feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you should feel like how you feel around your best friends with the man that you're seeing.
Yeah. And James is my best friend. So that's why I think I'm able to get there with him, is that at least I know that whether he rejects me or if he loves me, it's for who I really am. And so I've never had that anxiety. But what this person's also talking about is the hugely pervasive issue where I think it's not just about when you're interested in someone or dating someone. So often there's been this narrative that goes all the way back to like Christopher Hitchens, like one of the great sort of philosophers and speakers, writing an article in Vanity Fair saying, women just aren't funny, right? And he goes into the kind of context of that, but it is a deeply misogynist idea of women that exists. And for years, I sort of didn't really get it. I didn't get where it came from, because when I would hang out with women, I was hanging out with them on their own. And it was only when we started to integrate that I started to realize why men perceive women as not that funny or not that opinionated or not as fun to debate because women restrain themselves. And then I started to develop it. Like, I was watching this even with like a roommate that I had who was this like really, really smart, strong woman. And as soon as a boy would walk into the room, she suddenly started speaking in a baby voice and saying that she didn't know how to use the, like, can you show me how to use the inbox? And started like leaning her head on everything as if she could no longer support her neck if a man was in the room. And this was like a strong woman who'd survived a war. And like an actual legit massive war. And she just felt this, like it was like a switch.
Mm.
And I think men, I feel sad often that men don't get to see the reality of women unless they're friends with a woman and that woman doesn't want to have sex with them. So then they get to see how funny and collaborative and enjoyable female company can be. And I went to this party, I think I was telling you about this last year, I went to a party that had just a lot of lesbians at it. And I would say it's 90% lesbians and 10% people who aren't. And I have never had more fun at a party. I have never had so many stimulating conversations with women that I didn't know. I have never laughed more or watched more people argue in a really amusing and passionate way. And I left there so almost electrified by how stimulated I was. And I realized that, oh, it's because these people aren't seeking the validation of men, that they have just been allowed to become their full selves publicly. And how sad it is that most of us who are conditioned to also desire the approval of men don't have that luxury because that training starts at school.
I know. And I think that's why it's so important to have really strong female friendships.
Yes.
Because and at schools, you know, it's really interesting. I'm like really interested in the difference between like girls going to girls' schools or girls going to mixed schools, like mm-hmm. mixed gender schools. I don't know if it's a thing in America in the way that it is in the UK, but like I went to a girls' school in the UK and I'm so, so glad that I did because we really, like my friends, we really did live in isolation for a bit and we didn't have to think about like what we felt like around men until we were about 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that I got those like formative years without being in a classroom
Same.
With men and trying to impress boys. And, you know, I don't think I would have gotten as good grades had I been in classes with men, with mm-hmm. boys, sorry. And I think like...
I also think you might not have had such a strong sense of self.
I really do think a lot of my personality of great is from my school. Like my school was just so feminist to its core and we were all so insane and unhinged and loud. Like we were the loudest people ever and we've mm-hmm. always been so loud since then. So when we started having male friends, none of me and my friends from school were like scared of like, we would just scream at these boys. Mm-hmm. Like we were absolute hyenas. And I think a lot of that was that we had these like years in incubation of like, being supported and being like that, if that makes sense.
And I think a big part of the rise in the hatred of women that has always, like all hatred comes inherently, I think, from fear, in my opinion. And I think that there is a fear that men have that because they don't need to forage for us anymore, they don't need to protect us in the same way that they once did, and we have houses and locks and mace and Uber Eats, and you know that now we can even have a baby without them and just buy their seed. So they're feeling
that,
increasingly
that
redundant.
Triggers men so much.
It triggers men really badly, but that's because there is a fundamental sense of their biological conditioning, right? That is saying that this is my purpose, and you've taken it away from me, and so now I don't have purpose. And you do see this increase in men's mental health problems and issues where they don't feel like they have direction in their lives. Like they are definitely statistically struggling. And I think part of that is resolvable without women having to lose our independence. As in, I think all of it is resolvable without women having to lose their independence. But it's because we don't, as a society, focus anywhere near enough on men and women just being friends or being colleagues or being collaborators. This idea that there is always sexual tension. I just went on Neil Brennan's podcast. He's a really good friend of mine. I've been friends with him for 6 years. He's really close with me and my boyfriend. I'd say closer even to James. And I went on his podcast. We had the most normal chat. And just because we both said, it was like, oh, I really love you. And he was like, yeah, no, I love you too. And like with no emotion or anything. It's such a clinical chat about my most mentally ill moments. And his most mentally ill moments. And the comment section was just like, oh my God, can you feel the sexual tension between these two? And people being like, I feel shy just watching this. And I was like, and it was all men just being like, fucking hell, they're going to fuck. They're already fucking. Someone should let James Blake know that these two are definitely fucking right now.
That is so funny.
go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
I was really stunned by it. And I was like, there's no display here of tension whatsoever between me and Neil. But that is just projected onto it. This idea that there's no way this man and this woman could just have like a friendship where they love each other without wanting to see each other's genitals. And we don't have enough stories about that. Even a lot of the, you know, the TV series that are about a man and a woman being friends, eventually they end up fucking together. And we don't hear about, like, you know, it's either two women making a business together or a bunch of men making a business together. We don't get to see a lot of collaboration that doesn't involve eventually building a fucking family. And I think that is so destructive to our society.
Well, it also is why then women are so scared of just being normal. Because if we had a much more like friendly relationship between men and women, then women wouldn't feel like this person so nervous when they're just around a man, not even like a man that they're with, just around men. If we just knew that you could just be like calm and relaxed. And I think
that's, I see people do it around men that they're not even attracted.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's more like when a man is in the room.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about with that party, it's like, I'm presuming there weren't many men
there. No, almost no straight men.
Yeah. And I think when that is so, it does really change the vibe, because there will always be some women who will be much more conscious of how they look, or even if they don't fancy this person, there's something about like a man being there that, like, even I felt this a lot of my life, you just want them to validate you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if we just had a much more like equal footing with that, then it would be much easier for women to just like be out, be around men, be themselves. And then maybe they will get with one of them. Maybe they won't.
Yeah, but also then men wouldn't feel so redundant, because they're not redundant. Men are such great a massive vibes. And important part of my life.
Also, like, my thing is, like, I love the men in my life because they're all so funny, and like I have so much fun with them. Mm-hmm. Like the men that I'm friends with, I have so much fun with, and like make me laugh like so much. Why don't men just think that their purpose should just be to be like great to be around?
And, but
like,
it's not. Yeah, exactly.
Intelligent, stimulating people,
because they are.
That is a purpose, and that's all of our purposes.
Totally, totally. So many of my best friends are men, and I find their insight so impactful. I find the ideas we come up with together. As I said, James, even if he is my lover, is also most, first and foremost, my best friend.
My lover.
I'm sorry, I heard it. I felt it.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna go and leave. Like, I'm gonna leave now. I know
so much.
I know. I just don't
even
like.
Even if he is my lover.
My lover.
My lover.
Even if he is my lover.
Even if he is my lover, he's also my friend. You're disgusting.
I'm going to show myself out, all right? No one will ever hear from me ever again. Sorry, everyone. This is the last ever episode of I Weigh.
I can't believe you tried to just brush past that. I'm retiring. Well,
I honestly, I started an immediate sweat after I said it.
Even though he is my lover.
I'm retiring, and I'm changing my name, and I'm going to shave my head and leave the country.
I can't believe that.
Goodbye, everyone, forever.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Fine. But even though we're in a relationship, he's still my best friend. And the things that we collaborate on, music, we collaborate on ideas, and we collaborate on our friendships even together, it's we're building something. And I feel this way with all the boys who also live with me. And I so desperately wish that more people could experience this, because there are some differences between femininity and masculinity, and one person can contain all of those multitudes. But bringing those things together does not have to be a conflict. It can be a lovely collaborative experience. And if we could just do more to make sure that messaging, so that men realize that they are so much more valuable beyond their fucking seed or their muscles, then I think that we would be in a place where we don't breed so much insecurity in them, and where they don't fear us so much. And it's annoying to have to coddle anyone. But this is not just coming from them. It's not just coming from nowhere. It's coming from like a pervasive,
it's also coming from us,
media and society and us.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just about recognizing that and then figuring out how do we heal the fucking culture? Because we're in a mess.
But then maybe in that case, the best advice is have male friends as well.
Yeah.
Like I think, and I think women are also guilty of doing this, where like women don't have male friends without thinking, oh, maybe one day we're going to get with each other. You know, like maybe it'll be like a love story of the ages, like we'll be friends, then we'll end up together. Like I still think there's a part of that that's still like invades our mind.
Well, also sometimes you have the very fair fear that like that if you get with a man, he's going to then have a problem with or be threatened by your male friendships. And I remember James thinking it was a bit weird that I'm so close to my male friends. And I was like, they've been in my life since I was 19. They're not going anywhere. Nothing's ever happened with them up until now when we were all single. So nothing's ever going to happen. That's just, we just don't have a pheromonal interest in each other. So I'm not going to throw away this amazing, completely pure thing because you're worried. So either you leave, but they're staying. And then he was like, fine, fair. It was a fair point that if in over a decade I haven't shagged one of them, why would I start now?
Yeah, but also, like, even if you have shagged a friend, then you're friends with them now. I think it's good to, like, encourage boyfriends to be, because I've definitely been in relationships with men where they've been really jealous of my male friendships. And I think it's just good for men to just know that, like, they're not allowed to be possessive of you in that way.
But do you not see that that also goes the other way, where we see our female friends have a real big problem with their boyfriends having loads of girlfriends or an ex-girlfriend that they're still close to.
But again, that's not that's such a problem. Like this is why like we're in this situation, because it's again like that's what I was saying before of like I don't think women enough have male friends, and so then they don't understand that like their boyfriend can have a best friend who's a woman that they don't want to get with. Because
but I think if two people have gotten with each other before, that does add an extra layer of difficulty.
It 100%, to be fair 100%, to everyone. No, I'm agreeing with that. But also having gone through that multiple times and understood that like it's really not that deep if you had sex with someone 6 years ago and it was shit and you never wanted to think about it again.
Yeah.
But you're still friends with them because you went to school with them. Like that should be fine, you know. But I get there's so many different circumstances where like this is confusing and complicated. But I do think that just in general, aside from like having had sex with someone, 100% I agree that I think that women... Also, we permeate this idea that like men can't be friends with women and that we're jealous of our boyfriends having female friends. And actually, it's amazing if your boyfriend has female friends that they just like have a lovely, like really close
relationship. Also, then he's got people in his ear who understand you better.
Exactly.
And
it
can give him really good advice and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it prepares us for each other. I feel like my male friends having explained the male experience to me massively helped me understand James, massively helped me understand the experience and what they've grown up with and the amount of shit they have to like undo and uncondition themselves from that they learned on the internet. I feel so much empathy, and I think that empathy can only come from exposure. So and James didn't have female friends when he first met me, and I think had only ever seen, especially because he's a famous man, had only seen the most submissive hidden version of women. Like girls were just not leery around him because it's like, oh my god, this powerful man who is like desirable because he's, you know, got a successful career. And so and a lot of the women that he saw were fans, so they really weren't being themselves around him. And then he met my friends and they're all very boisterous, confident, funny, smart women, and was like, great, I'm on board with this. And now, for example, you are separately of me best friends with James, and that's lovely, and you guys hang out on your own and like even went to like fucking Spain or something together, and it's just and it's such a joy. It's such a joy that I know that there's someone who has such a sound mind, who's so nurturing, who fulfills that sensitive part of all men, who he's got with him. It doesn't
but
occur
also
to
it's
me.
And my relationship with him is so useful for me in terms of my relationships with men, because he really helps me figure out like what's going on with situations that I'm in with men.
100%.
Yeah.
How's life and dating since the 28 Dates podcast, which everyone should go and listen to, is absolutely amazing.
Do you know what? I haven't really dated that much, have I? So life is good. Dating, I had a bit of a shitstorm towards the end of last year with a man. So then I've just felt a bit jaded.
Actually jaded.
Yeah, yeah. That's an appropriate use of the word jaded. But great for my work. And then, I don't know, I met that actually we're going on a date with a guy tonight. That guy that I met on the hike. I got chatted up on a hike.
And then they sat together at the top of a hill. And then
we went on a
hike
together. And then we sat at the top of Runyon Canyon, just like looking out of the view, just like talking. And I didn't want to say that I knew I was burning. Because it was like peak sun at the top of Runyon Canyon.
But it's such a Hollywood meet cute.
Yeah, but I didn't want to interrupt it by being like, I have to go because I have no sun cream on my back.
Melanoma.
Yeah, literally like, I'm burning. I could feel that I was burning. So I stayed there for sort of as long as possible. But then I agreed that I was going to go for a drink with him this evening. So maybe I'll go. I don't know. I'll see how I feel later.
Well, make sure to come back and report whenever you can. And for anyone who doesn't know, Grace went on 28 dates in 28 days, right?
Yes.
And recorded
also,
all of
really
them.
Quickly on that, I thought it was so cool that that man just came up to me and spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And when I told, like, I went back and told James, and he was like, what? And I was like, I know, it's quite crazy, isn't it? Because that never happens, especially in London. If it happened, I'd be like, you are a serial killer, do not talk to me.
Why?
Because I guess there's like such a stigma of doing that now, but because this guy was buff, well dressed, seemed really nice, I was like, this is amazing. I wish this happened to me every day. But it's just that most of the time they're not, like, they're kind of creepy.
I don't know. The initial moment in which someone comes over and expresses a sort of interest in me, as long as it's done respectfully, regardless of whatever they are like or their looks, I always feel like that's flattering. And yes. Then it just can very quickly dissolve into annoyance or terror for my life.
Yes.
If they then don't leave upon the no. But I do really appreciate this, like, intense pressure that is upon, like, silently upon men, that is also, by the way, partially bred by the fact that men are taught to feel afraid of a woman who approaches them and see her as desperate and thirsty.
Yeah.
Like, well, we're fucked in
these
two
ways. One of the things in the how do you identify if a woman's low value, like, sort of Andrew Tate culture, is that if a woman is available to meet you when you ask her to meet you, she's low value.
What?
Yeah, so one of their things is, like, if she is always around when you say, like, what are you up to tonight? If she's always around, she's low value because she's making herself too available for you.
But she shouldn't be available. She shouldn't be unavailable while going on dates with other men.
Well, exactly.
She's also low
but
value.
She should be.
So where should she be?
To show you. Well, exactly. She's in a limbo. I think she's nowhere, basically.
Right.
Because they don't. That she shouldn't be getting with other people. No, because that makes her low value. If she always replies to your texts quickly, and if she's like, basically, if she's a good communicator, she's low value. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It's so interesting.
God, we're
it's
just
like that
torturing
thing
of, each other.
Like, 100%.
We're all just torturing each other. We're putting all this pressure on men to have to go and be the ones who have to pursue. And then that's loads of pressure for them. And then post Me Too, that's become a very complex and bizarre grey area dynamic where they're then also afraid of their own approach, which I can understand people being like, just fucking don't be a rapist. Don't be a pervert. But I think there is this, like, tension now.
Totally.
So they're afraid to do it.
And
then
they're afraid
women
of rejection
are afraid.
As
yeah,
well,
and they're
by
afraid
the
of rejection because we have no teaching about rejection.
No,
when we're
rejection
younger.
In that form is quite raw. Like, if you go up to someone, like, in the middle of the day, like, it's a.
Yeah, and some people can be unkind in the way that they reject because they're just like, I should be able to walk through the supermarket and get a sandwich and not be fucking bothered. So I understand what everyone's experience is, but if we keep having these fucking rules that drive everyone mad, we're just going to keep going round and round in circles and then pushing each other further and further apart.
Because also, by the way, and this isn't in these questions, but one of the things I get asked the most, especially since I did that dating podcast, is like, I don't want to be on dating apps. I'm sick of them. Everyone is so fatigued of dating apps. They've been around for too long. It's like the novelty's just worn off in such an extreme way. How do I meet people? And I do think bringing back the idea that you should be allowed to just go and say to someone, oh, hey, like, I like your style. And then you can just get a vibe of, like, are they having a conversation with me? If they're not, you walk away. But I think we should go back to that because that used to be how people would meet. And that's a nice thing to do.
I agree. And it's how you were able to gauge if you even had, like, a chemistry
exactly.
with
that's
someone.
Exactly. That's the other
so
thing.
You don't waste
online,
each other's fucking time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, how do you know if you're going to like someone if you've just spoken to them for, like, 2 days on a dating app? Like, you just don't. They
there's no chemical instinct whatsoever. and connection. So I think that that's really important. I agree. And I hope that we can try to, I mean, I feel like we've really sort of fixed the world today.
No, I know. I really do You're agree. All,
everyone's welcome, you know. Yes. I really feel like we put our big brains together. We just fixed it all. Well done, us.
Huge day big women, day, men alike.
All human beings. Yeah. Humanity.
Humanity.
Humankind.
A huge day for...
God, it's so nice to know that it's fixed now.
Yes.
I can just relax.
Mm.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Grace, tell everyone where they can find you on tour and what the tour is called and where they can find tickets for the tour.
Why did you say it like that?
I don't know. I panicked. I glitched.
My lover. My show is called Grace Campbell Is on Heat, and I don't want to give too much away of what it's about because it's still a work in progress, but I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a really fun show that's also going to make you cry and laugh, and then there might be a cameo from my dog at some point. I was doing the Edinburgh Fringe for 2.5 weeks, and then I'm going on tour
at the beginning of Edinburgh,
the beginning of August, and then we're going on tour October, November, December, UK, Europe, London, Hammersmith, Apollo, and you can get tickets.
And then you'll work your way towards the United States,
and then I'm going to bring the show here, yeah, next year. And then you can buy tickets at disgracecampbell.com.
Go do it. And you've given us some sort of little kind of hints as to what's coming in the show. It sounds fucking brilliant. I can't wait to see it.
You'll love it.
Thank you for coming today. You are a delight.
So are you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I Weigh with Jameela Jamil is produced and researched by myself, Jameela Jamil, Erin Finnegan, Kimmy Gregory, and Amelia Chapelot. And the beautiful music that you are hearing now is made by my boyfriend, James Blake. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. It's such a great way to show your support and helps me out massively. And lastly, at I Weigh, we would love to hear from you and share what you weigh at the end of this podcast. Please email us a voice recording sharing what you weigh at iweighpodcast@gmail.com.
We have big feelings for Fridays. Is it because Fridays also mean free fries at McDonald's?
Free McDonald's fries.
It's okay if you need a minute.
Free Fries Friday. Get free medium fries with any $1 purchase.
Valid one time on Fridays through 12/31/24 at participating McDonald's. Excludes tax. Must opt into rewards.